Welcome to the third installment of an advanced overview of Hilchos Bishul based on Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon's Sefer Shabbos. In the last year, we discussed three types of containers and the rules of Bishul with respect to those containers based on their proximity to the fire. We met a Kli Rishon, which is a container, a pot, a pan, a frying pan, which had been directly on the fire, or even if it's not directly on the fire now, it had once been on the fire. Next, we met a Kli Sheni, which was a container into which the contents of a Kli Rishon were poured. And finally, we met a Kli Shlishi, which is a container into which the contents of a Kli Sheni was poured. In this year, we're going to discuss three cases which don't fit neatly into these categories of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, and Kli Shlishi. And we're going to try and discern what the rules of these three problem cases are. The cases are Iroi, which means pouring from a container directly onto a food, Matzekes, which means a ladle, and finally Dover Gush, which means a solid food, like a hot potato or a piece of meat. We're going to see that these three things are questionable, and they don't necessarily neatly fit into any of the three categories of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, or Kli Shlishi. At the end of this year, you should have the conceptual background to answer the following six questions. Number one, is it permissible to pour hot water directly onto a tea bag on Shabbos? Number two, if you have droplets of water in your cup, are you allowed to pour hot water directly into the cup, or do you have to take the droplets out first by drying it or shaking it out? Third, are you allowed to add salt or spices to a bowl of soup? Fourth, are you allowed to put ketchup on hot meat on Shabbos? And finally, is it permissible to have raw food touching a hot potato on Shabbos? Let's begin with the concept of Iroi, which means pouring. And let's start with Iroi Mikli Rishon, which means pouring from a container that was directly on the fire. An example of Iroi Mikli Rishon would be that you have an urn and you pour water directly from the urn, from say the urn spout, onto a tea bag, meaning the hot water from the urn is directly hitting the raw food. In contrast, Kli Sheni would be that you poured the water from the urn into a cup, and then you put the tea bag into the cup. The rationale for the distinction is that if you're pouring the hot water directly onto the tea bag, it's more likely to cook it better than if you put the tea bag into water that had already been poured into the cup. The question is, how do we relate to Iroi? From a Kli Rishon, the pouring from a Kli Rishon. Will we consider the Iroi, will we consider the pouring to have the status of a Kli Rishon, or will we instead give it the status of a Kli Sheni? Tosos in Shabbos Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis records a dispute between the Rishonim on this matter. According to the Ri, pouring from a Kli Rishon is considered just like a Kli Rishon, meaning if you pour it from your urn onto a teabag, it's as if you put the teabag directly into the urn. Rebases his position on the teaching of Rabbeinu Yonah in the Yerushalmi Perek Gimel Halachah. Tosfos and Shabbos tells us, Ulari nira de Iroi kekli rishon. Re believes that Iroi, that pouring from a kli rishon, is just like putting something in the kli rishon. Uvishalmi Perek Kira Boi, Vyushalmi in Perek Kira, the third Perek Shabbos asks, Mahu li tintam lo matha valeri salem amayla. What's the rule to put spices on the bottom of a container and to pour hot water on them from above? Rabbi Yonah Oimer, also, the Iroi Kekli Rishon. Rabbi Yonah rules this would be forbidden because he says that pouring is equivalent to putting something in a Kli Rishon. So, effectively, you're just following the position of Rabbi Yonah and the Yerushalmi. In contrast to the Ri, Rashbam, another one of the Baal Yatosos, rules that Iroi, that pouring from a Kli Rishon, is considered like a Kli Sheni and it doesn't cook. Tosfos tells us, Rabbeinu Shmuel meviraya, the Iroi ki Kli Sheni, mihod kai melon, tato gover. Rabbi Shmuel, the Rashbam, argues that Iroi is that pouring is just like a Kli Sheni based on that which we rule, tato gover, the lower one wins. What does tato gover mean? So the Gemara in Pesachim, the Fa'im of Min Aleph, and this is a concept which is going to be very relevant in Hilchos Kashrus, tells us that if you pour boiling water on top of a cold piece of meat, this doesn't forbid, it doesn't turn the entire piece of meat into non-kosher, because we say the lower one wins, meaning that the cold item below cools off whatever hit it above, and therefore the cold item below does not become non-kosher. In contrast, if the item below is hot and the item on top is cold, then the lower item will become forbidden. So just to play this out, so if you have a cold kosher burger on the bottom of a plate, and then a hot non-kosher burger falls on top of the kosher burger, the cold kosher burger, then the kosher burger will not become forbidden to eat. You'll still be able to eat the kosher burger with some qualifications, as we're going to see. Whereas, if the kosher burger on the bottom were hot and the non-kosher burger were cold, the kosher burger is going to, the heat of the lower item is going to absorb whatever was in the top item, and it's going to become non-kosher. So it comes out that we have a dispute between Ri and the Rashbam as to whether we say Iroi is like a Kli Rishon, or is it like a Kli Sheni? What grounds this Machlokas? What's the rationale for the dispute? So we saw in the last year that Tosus discussed the distinction between a Kli Rishon, which is taken off the fire, and a Kli Sheni. A Kli Rishon, Tosus told us, is problematic even if it's not on the fire, because its walls are still hot. In contrast, a Kli Sheni's walls are cold, so it's going to cool down much quicker. So the question is, how do we understand the role of the hot walls of a Kli Rishon and the cold walls of a Kli Sheni, and which one is more critical? Do we say that the hot walls are the relevant factor which generates cooking? Or do we say what's really relevant is the cold walls which facilitate cooling things down? So Iroi, pouring from a Kli Rishon, is an intermediate case. Meaning, on the one hand, it doesn't have hot walls which are preserving its heat. After all, it's a flow of water. It's coming out of the Kli Rishon. It's coming out of the container with hot walls. But on the other hand, the Iroi isn't in a container which has cold walls which are cooling it down. And Rimon suggests that this is the grounds of the dispute between the Rashbam and the Ri. The Rashbam holds that what's critical for causing something to cook is the presence of hot walls for heating it. And once you've poured liquid out of the container it was in with hot walls, it's no longer able to cook. Hence, the Rashbam says, Iroi is Kli Sheni. In contrast, the Ri thinks that something is only no longer able to cook once it's in a container with cold walls. And if you're pouring from the Kli Rishon, it hasn't yet hit a container in which it has cold walls, in which case it retains the Kli Rishon status. Now, it also suggests a third position, a compromised position, which says that Iroi is neither exactly like a Kli Rishon nor like a Kli Sheni, but rather has its own rules. And this is the position of Rabbeinu Tam, another one of the Tosafitic rabbis, whose commentary is brought in Maseches Zvachim, Daf Tzadi Hei Amud Beis. According to Rabbeinu Tam, Iroi from a Kli Rishon, pouring from a Kli Rishon, does in fact cook, but it only cooks Kidei Klipa, meaning to say, it only cooks the outermost layer of the item which you pour it onto. In this way, Rabbeinu Tam is able to resolve the contradictory sources, some of which imply that Kli Rishon does cook, Iroi Kli Rishon does cook, and some of which imply that Iroi Kli Sheni does not cook. So Rabbeinu Tam says, in fact, both are true. It cooks, but not fully. It cooks Kidei Klipa, but does not cook the entire thing that it hits. So let's see the Tosas and Zvachim inside. Tosas says, quoting the Gemara, Iroi Sechei Riseach Minayin, Tamad Leimar, Vasher Tevush Alboi Yishaver. So the context of the Gemara there is the Gemara is asking about an earthenware vessel into which you poured kodshim, into which you poured consecrated sacrifices or consecrated sacrifice sauce. The idea is that after a particular period of time, depending on the relevant offering, the bowl is going to become forbidden because it has the cooked contents of a sacrifice inside of it, and after a certain point, you're not allowed to eat the sacrifice anymore. It's called nosar. It's called leftovers. So the Gemara acknowledges that if you cooked something inside of a pot, if you cooked kodshim inside of a pot, then your pot's going to become forbidden after a particular period of time. But the question is, what if you didn't cook kodshim inside of this pot, but rather you poured hot kachim into your pot. Will the pouring into the pot still confer kachim status onto the pot, such that you would not be able to use the pot after it becomes noser? So the Gemara in Zvachim goes as follows. Tan Rabban, asher tevushal boi. The pasuk in Vayikra says that a earthenware pot in which you cooked kachim should be broken. Amy Ella should be shalboy. The Gemara says, I only know that you're meant to break a pot which you had cooked kachim in. But what about a case in which you poured boiling hot water or boiling hot contents into the pot? Talmud Leimar Asher Tevush Al Boi Yishavim. The Torah says that it will be cooked in, it shall be broken. So Rashi explains that the inference of the pasuk is as follows. If the pasuk had only meant to teach that you need to break a pot if you cook directly in the pot, it should have said, it should have been more verbally economist, and said, V'imbikli cheres tevushal yishaver. If you cooked it in an earthenware pot, it shall be broken. For the fact that it says, ukli cheres asher tevushal bo yishaver, the extra words of tevushal bo, which you cooked in it, we infer that being cooked in any way, even if you poured boiling contents into the pot, that you'll need to break the pot, that pouring directly in would be considered cooking. So Tosfos has a very long discussion of this source, but he says, Mikan medaktik Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam inferred from this Gemara, the iroi kekli rishon, that pouring directly into a pot from a hot vessel would be considered just like a kli rishon, midachosher kemevushal, since the Gemara considers it like bishul. But now we have a problem. What do we do with Rashbam's proof that Iroi should be klisheni, since we say tata agavar, the lower one wins. And if the lower item is cold, then the lower item doesn't cook. So Rabbeinu Tam resolves the issue as follows. He says, v'aflagav the kaimon de kavasi the shmuel, the amr tata agavar, even though we do in fact rule like Shmuel, who says in Psachim and elsewhere that the lower one wins, and if the lower one is cold, we follow the lower one status. May the shmuel de mevashel kedei klipa. Shmuel would agree that although it's the case that the hot item on top doesn't completely transform the lower item, it still does confer its status to the outermost layer of the item it comes in contact with. And therefore, in the case of this pot which you poured kachim into, the outermost layer of the pot is going to become forbidden. And similarly, applying this to Shabbos, the outermost layer of what you pour your hot water from the Klirishon onto will be considered cooked. Simply speaking, it seems like the Shulchan Aruch rules like the Ri. We see in Shulchan Aruch, Ilcha Shabbos and Mishin Ruches Sif Yud, Osir Litin Tavlin Bik'ara Veleros Alein Miklirishon. It's forbidden to put spices onto a plate and then pour directly onto those spices from Miklirishon, implying that would be cooking. But we see from the Shulchan Aruch in the laws of Malicha and the laws of salting, in Nirdeis and in Samaches Sif Yud, that the Shulchan Aruch rules like Rabbeinu Tam, that pouring from a Klirishon does not completely cook, but only cooks the Klipa, only cooks the outermost layer. Now, practically speaking, you would think that Ri, who says that Iroi is Kikli Rishon, should be more stringent than Rabbeinu Tam, who says that Iroi only cooks Kedei Klipa, only cooks the outermost layer. But practically speaking, it's going to come out that Rabbeinu Tam is more stringent for the following reason. Let's say that you pour from a Kli Rishon onto a raw food on Shabbos. So, according to both Ri and Rabbeinu Tam, you would have violated the prohibition of cooking on Shabbos, because according to Rabbeinu Tam, you'll have cooked the outermost layer, and according to Ri, you'll have cooked the entire food. But either way, you'll have violated the prohibition of cooking on Shabbos. But let's say, and this is a practical case the Mishnah Berurah raises with respect to tea leaves, that you had poured hot water onto a food before Shabbos, and then wanted to re-pour hot water onto that food again on Shabbos. So, according to the Ri, had you poured the hot water on the food before Shabbos, then it would be completely cooked. So it would be okay in principle to pour hot water again onto it on Shabbos since it had already been cooked. But, according to Rabbeinu Tam, since you only cooked the outermost layer of the food by pouring the hot water onto it before Shabbos, on Shabbos itself, you would not be able to then go ahead and pour hot water on this food again for the concern that you might cook some as of yet uncooked layer of the food. So that ends our primary discussion of Iroi pouring from a Kli Rishon. So we see, like, we rule like a Ben Tam, that Iroi Kli Rishon, pouring from a Kli Rishon, is Ki Kli Rishon. It is just like a Kli Rishon. However, it only cooks Kidei Klipa. It only cooks the outermost layer. Now let's move on to a practical case of Iroi Mikli Rishon, which seems quite insignificant, but is actually somewhat practical, and that is pouring hot water from an urn or kettle into a cup which has droplets of water left over. Let's say you had rinsed a cup or a spoon at some point on Shabbos with cold sink water, which had never yet been cooked, and then you wanted to put hot water from an urn into the cup. The concern is that by pouring the hot water into the cup, you'll be cooking these droplets. And for this reason, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that you should dry out a cup before you pour the hot water in from the urn. Let's see what Rav Moshe says inside. Rav Moshe in Igros Moshe, Volume 1, Siman Tzadi Gimel, Section 93 says, V'hine Iroi mevashel kede klipa mido oraisa. Iroi pouring cooks the outermost layer, biblically. V'lochin, yesh lesser leros mitoch kli rishon roschin l'kli shadichu b'mayim karin. And therefore we forbid you to pour from a boiling kli rishon into a container or cup which had been rinsed with cold water, shalom is bashal, which had not been cooked, and shall be tipin, there are little droplets left over, simish bashal matipis, that the droplets get cooked. And even though you have no interest in cooking these little droplets, it's still forbidden, and you're meant to dry the cup out. In contrast to Rav Moshe, the Shrisha Shabba says, Vishamaiti shagona tzadik mariner of Arye Leib, Mistavisk Zatzal, Haya Nizar Shalai Laris Mayim Botech Akois Achis Nagif. Achleir in Lizulasai Lerabanik Shishoi the Avdiachi. So Shish Shabba says that there was in fact this very religious rabbi who he knew, Rav Arye Leib Mistavisk, who was stringent to not pour hot water into a cup which has little droplets from rinsing. However, the Shish Shabba says he never saw any other great rabbi who was concerned about this, so we shouldn't be concerned about it either. Rav Avadia Yosef says that there's grounds to be lenient. However, he says that if you want to be stringent on this matter, if you want to wipe out your cup, that would be great. But his suggestion is just shake out the cup, but you can go ahead and pour hot water directly into the cup, even without having dried it. He says there are five reasons not to be concerned about cooking these little droplets. Number one, according to the Aruch, it's okay to engage in a psik resha de lo nichle. Psik resha de lo nichle means an unavoidable consequence which doesn't give you any benefit. Meaning, although it's the case that pouring the hot water into the cup will inevitably cook the little droplets of water, you have no interest, no care, no concern about these water droplets being cooked. So the Aruch would say that it's totally okay. Next, says Rav Avadia, we know that the Rosh Hashanah thinks that Iroi is kiklisheni. Pouring from an urn is considered like a klisheni, meaning it doesn't have the capacity to cook. So that would be further grounds to be lenient in this case. Next, we have the position of the Yerushalmi and the Ramban, both of whom hold that a kli rishon, which is not on the fire, is not capable of cooking. So in this case, even if you'll say that the water which hit your cup has a kli rishon status, since the kli rishon is not on the fire, since this water is not on the fire, it won't be able to cook, at least biblically, according to Yerushalmi and the Ramban. And even if we'll say, according to Yerushalmi and the Ramban, that this is a rabbinic prohibition, we're still not going to be concerned. Because even if you don't hold like the Aruch, who we mentioned in Reason 1 to be lenient here, who says that we're lenient by a psik resha in general, everybody would agree that by a psik resha b'derabanan, an unavoidable consequence by a rabbinic prohibition, that would be permitted. So meaning, since this is a rabbinic prohibition anyway, to pour the water onto the droplets, according to the Ramban and the Yerushalmi, and you have no interest in the water droplets being cooked, it would be okay to pour the hot water onto the droplets. Further grounds to be lenient is that there are opinions who hold that there's no issue to cook something which is already edible, and the droplets of water are already drinkable without being heated up. And finally, we could say that this is a chatzi shir. You haven't cooked a significant amount of food. Droplets are not significant with respect to the prohibition of cooking on Shabbos. You need to cook a significant drinkable amount of water. Rav Avadi concludes as follows. Zos Torah Sa'ola. This is what emerges from our discussion. Shemotu mitzad hadin leros mayim mecham l'toch hakos shehudach betzoynin v'ola resisei mayim she'olu min harachza. It's permissible to pour hot water into a cup which is rinsed with cold water and which has water droplets which are less than it from washing. And similarly, if it has a spoon inside of it which is rinsed and it has water on top of it, and you don't need to want to dry off your spoon or your cup, as Ramosha had said, before you pour hot water into them. When we call makom, nonetheless, says Rav Avadia, you should shake out the cup from the cold water that's in it before you pour hot water into the cup. And similarly, you should shake off the spoon, and only afterwards should you pour from a klirishon onto the cup. Nonetheless, says Rav Avadia, even though I don't think that there's really strong grounds to be stringent here, somebody who's stringent, not to pour directly from a kli rishon into the cup, but rather by means of some other intervening kli, some intervening vessel, or after drawing off the cup or the spoon, tovei olav birchas toiv. Such a person should be blessed. Such a person is behaving in an appropriate way. So it emerges that, practically speaking, if you want to be stringent for Rav Moshe, it's good to dry out the cup from any water droplets. And the Rav Avadia says that's even a laudable thing to do. But in principle, you could be lenient and follow Rav Avadia and just shake out the cup before pouring the hot water in. And then just another thing that we should note, Rav Moshe notes this, and there's Karlin Karnhai, it's a Vesav of Rama Levi Heller, says this as well. If you have droplets in your cup which came from an urn, meaning the droplets of water had already once been cooked, then you don't have this concern. The concern is only if the droplets of water had never been cooked. So if the droplets come from an urn, let's say you're in a yeshiva or a shul on Shabbos morning, and a lot of people have been pouring in hot water from an urn into a cup on Shabbos, so the leftover droplets of hot water from the cup that was used, that were put in via the urn, would not be problematic since they had at one point been cooked. And as we're going to see, we say ein bishul achar bishul. There's no concern of cooking after cooking. And although it's the case that we say that yesh bishul achar bishul b'davar lach, that there is a problem of recooking something with a liquid, since these are small droplets, Rav Moshe is of the opinion that we should be lenient. So this exhausts our discussion of the iroi mikli rishon, pouring from a first container. But what about iroi mikli sheni, pouring from a container which had not been on the fire, but which you had poured the hot contents of a kli rishon, a vessel which had been on the fire, into? Just again, to give our classic example, a kli rishon would be the urn, which is on a heating element, or which is being heated. And when you pour the contents of the urn into a cup, the cup has the status of a kli sheni. So we might think that, given that we practically say that the contents of a kli rishon when poured on something else are considered a kli rishon, that when we pour from a kli sheni onto some food, that would be considered a kli sheni. However, practically speaking, there's grounds to be more lenient by a kli sheni based on what the Mishnah in Shabbos Daf Kuf Lamed Daf Kuf Mem He Amud Beis teaches us. The Mishnah says, Kol Shabbachamir Shabbos, anything which had already been soaked in hot water from Erev Shabbos, meaning let's say it had been cooked in hot water on Erev Shabbos, Shayr Nesay Becham B'Shabbos, you're allowed to re-soak it in hot water on Shabbos, V'kol Shalei B'Becham Erev Shabbos, and anything which had not been soaked in hot water before Shabbos, Madich Nesay Becham B'Shabbos, you're allowed to rinse it with hot water on Shabbos. Chutz, with the exception of Hamaliach Hayashon, the Kulius Ispinin, Shadachosan Zoyhi Gemar Malacht. With the exception of Maliyah Hayoshan, which means the old salt thing, and the Mefarshim say that it could be either old salted meat or old salted fish, and then Kulius Ispinin, which is a fish which very quickly cooks or it becomes edible when you pour out water onto it. So the Mishnah rules that things which were not cooked before Shabbos should not be soaked in hot water on Shabbos. However, it is permissible to rinse them, meaning to pour hot water directly onto them on Shabbos, unless these are things which cook particularly easily. Now, if we say the Mishnah is dealing with a Kli Rishon, meaning that you'd be able to pour directly from the Kli Rishon, then that would imply that pouring from a Kli Rishon onto a hot food is not considered cooking on Shabbos. Now, in order to explain, or in order to make this Mishnah consistent with the position that pouring from a Kli Rishon is considered cooking, Tosfos explains that the pouring in question, the pouring being done in the Mishnah, means that you're pouring out water from a Kli Sheni onto your raw food. Tosfos Neflam Tesan Alf tell us, Madichin Oisai, you rinse the food with hot water. Leperish Rashba, the Mefarish, the Irik Kli Sheni, according to the Rashba or the Rashbam, one of the Bali Tosfos who says that pouring from a Kli Rishon is like Kli Sheni, it all works out well. The insurance is a Kli Rishon, that you don't soak the raw food in a Kli Rishon. Avol madichin is a Kli Rishon, but you're allowed to rinse it with Kli Rishon water. You're allowed to pour Kli Rishon water onto it. Avol lepeir shavir time b'farish you have Kli Rishon. But what about according to Rebbeinu Tam's position, who says that pouring is like a Kli Rishon? It must be the case that the rinsing in question is rinsing, pouring from a Kli Sheni. That you're not even meant to soak it in a Kli Sheni. Since the water is hot, it looks like you're cooking. The point being that if you take a raw piece of chicken and put it in a pot full of steaming water, people might not know this pot of steaming water has never been on the fire. People might not know that this pot is a Kli Sheni. And even though a Kli Sheni in principle is incapable of cooking, nonetheless, it looks like you're cooking when you dunk your chicken into this hot pot of water. Whereas, if you merely pour the boiling water from your Kli Sheni onto the chicken, nobody will think that you're cooking the chicken, since scalding and cooking are two different processes. And nobody cooks by pouring hot water onto things, unless they're Kali Abishol, unless they're things which cook very easily, like this Kulius Ispinin, like the Spanish mackerel, this fish that cooks very easily. Think if you have very, very thin fillets of meat or very thin tuna fillets, like sushi tuna or sushi salmon, if you pour scalding hot water on these things, you'll see that they quickly begin to look cooked, even though you've only poured hot water onto them. Practically speaking, the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah both understand, according to Tosfos, meaning according to the position of Rebbeinu Tam, that you're not meant to pour from a Kli Sheni onto things which cook easily, because there's a concern of Kali Abishol, which means they easily cook, but you would be allowed to pour from a Kli Sheni onto things which do not easily cook. And the practical case, which is very, very relevant, is that you shouldn't pour from a Kli Sheni directly onto tea leaves, because the consensus is that tea leaves do cook very easily. So that ends our discussion of Iroi, the concept of pouring. And let's summarize. We saw that when it comes to Iroi, there's a dispute whether Iroi is like if you pour Iroi onto a raw food. Is it as if you put the raw food into a Kli Rishon? Is it as if you put the raw food into a Kli Sheni? Or is it as if you've only cooked the outermost layer of the food? So we saw there's three opinions in Tosfos. Re takes the opinion that Iroi is a Kli Rishon. He says the pouring cooks the entire thing. Rashbam says that Iroi is Kikli Sheni. The pouring from the Kli Rishon only does not render the thing cooked. It only is as if you put it into a Kli Sheni. And Rebbeinu Tam says that Iroi is Mevashal Kedei Klipa. Iroi cooks the outermost layer. And Rebbeinu Tam's position ends up being quite stringent, because this would mean that you wouldn't be allowed to pour hot water onto a raw food on Shabbos, since by pouring the hot water on the raw food, you've cooked the animal slayer. And similarly, you wouldn't be allowed to pour the hot water onto a food which had already had hot water poured onto it before Shabbos. You would not be able to go ahead and then pour hot water on it on Shabbos itself. And the reason being that we're concerned that by the second pouring on Shabbos, you might cook a hitherto uncooked layer of the food. Then we saw that when it comes to a klisheni, you would be allowed to pour from a hot klisheni onto most foods. However, if the food looks like it cooks easily, say like thin fillets of pepper steak or a raw fish that cooks very easily, the Mishnah's example is salted meat or salted fish, or a contemporary example would be tea leaves, you would not be meant to pour from a klisheni onto those items. So this concludes our discussion of the first problem case, which doesn't fit clearly into the categories of kli rishon, klisheni or klishlishi, and that's iroi. The next two cases we'll discuss are those of matzekes, a ladle, and davar gush, a solid food, like a hot potato or a hot piece of meat. Let's move on to our second problem case, which is a matzekes, a ladle. This is another case where we're not sure whether it should be considered like a kli rishon or a klisheni. And this is going to be very significant, because if your matzekes, if your ladle has the status of a klisheni, then it could turn your bowl of soup into a klishlishi. And if your bowl of soup is a klishlishi, then we're going to be much more lenient about what you can put into your bowl of soup. Whereas if it's a klisheni, the rules for what you can put into your soup bowl are going to be much more stringent. Tosfos, in Maseches Avodah Zarah, in discussion of Hechsher Kalim, in discussion of koshering non-kosher vessels, wonders if it would be possible to put a bowl into a pot that's on the fire, and then wait until the water inside the pot hits the boiling point, and then goes ahead and makes the bowl hit the boiling point, and then pull the bowl out with its boiling water, and to put kalim, to put utensils into the bowl in order to kosher them, in order to make them kosher. Tosfos cites a practice, the yesh misimin ka'ara b'seich machavats ala esh ad sher sichus oilois toichak ara. There are those who will put a bowl into a pot on the fire until the bowl begins to boil. And then they'll kosher items inside of that bowl. And at this point, Ri was unsure whether this bowl should be considered a kli rishon or not. And he was stringent, meaning to say that Ri did not consider this bowl, which hit the boiling point, to be a kli rishon. So that's true with respect to kashrus, but it's going to have significant ramifications for Shabbos. Tosu says the suffix, it's unclear whether this bowl, which you put inside your hot pot, will be considered a kli rishon or a kli sheni. But the Pri Chadash learns from Tosfos that when it comes to Shabbos, a ladle would be considered a kli sheni. The Pri Chadash says, "B'Tosfos kasvu sheyesh misimin ka'ar b'seich machavas ad al ha'esh ad sheresichos oilos toich hak'ar." That there are those who put a bowl into a pot that's on the fire, until bubbles begin to bubble within the bowl. And Ri was unsure whether this bowl would count as a klirishin. Umashma shim shoyev bekli min hayoyra reisachas. The implication is that if you would draw liquid from a boiling pot, it's obvious that merely drawing out the water would be a klisheni status. So a ladle would have a klisheni status. Meaning to say, Tosfos was only ever doubting what would the rule be if you left something in the pot for a long time. But if you just dip the ladle in and out, it'll certainly be considered a klisheni. And that's as well what the Meiri and the Maharil rule, that a ladle is considered a klisheni. In contrast, the Taz rules that a ladle is considered like a kli rishon, and he's astounded by those who think that it's a klisheni. The Taz writes in Yoredeya Simon Sadi Beis, Siv Katan Lamed, V'timihati me'od al zeh. I'm very astounded by those who think that a ladle should be a klisheni. D'ha ba'oidi b'kli rishon, because when you put your ladle into a kli rishon, ha'kli hazeh she'teichev b'oi, gam hu kli rishon. The item that you put into Kli Rishon takes on a Kli Rishon status. Ve'heyach ne'emar kan, she'kshemaitziya kli, she'sheyem me'Kli Rishon, nasa Kli Sheni. How can we say that when you remove the vessel from the Kli Rishon, it will now take on a Kli Sheni status? Kevan she'ba olav, she'em Kli Rishon. Since it got a Kli Rishon status, mi'noisin le'achar kach she'em acher. Who can give it a different status? And don't we know that a Kli Rishon remains a Kli Rishon even if you took it off the fire? The Taz continues that Tosfos Kasu Hasam the Ikar Achiluk Shebein Kli Rishon Kli Sheni Hu the Kli Sheni Miskarer Machmash Ein Deifnus of Chamin Alkin Heiluk Umiskarer Bizeh Vade Deifnus of Reishin Shehuchm Reishin the Kli Rishon. The Taz says that Tosfos told us that the distinction between a Kli Rishon and a Kli Sheni is that a Kli Sheni cools given that its walls are not hot. When you stick a ladle into the pot of hot soup, the ladle's walls get hot, so it should have a Kli Rishon status. Meaning to say that the difference between a Kli Rishon and a Kli Sheni depends on the fact that a Kli Sheni's walls are cold, as was explained. But since the ladle was inside of the hot pot, it should also be considered a Kli Rishon. The more lenient opinion would push back against the Taz and say that only something which was actually literally cooking on the fire will be considered a Kli Rishon, and not the walls of something which was inserted into something that was on the fire. So how do we rule? Do we rule like the more lenient opinion of the Pri Chadash, that a ladle is considered a Kli Sheni, or like the more stringent opinion of the Taz, that a ladle is considered a Kli Rishon? So the Mishnah Berurah writes, Kli Sheni Mikri. The Mishnah Berurah says that what's a Kli Sheni? It's something into which you poured the contents of a Kli Rishon. However, if you take liquid in an empty container from a Kli Rishon, meaning like in the case of a ladle, some say that it's like a Kli Rishon. And this is specifically the case if you left the ladle inside the soup until it got hot, then it would certainly be a Kli Rishon. So the Mishnah Berurah says, if you left it inside the pot for a while, you're definitely in trouble. But even if you left it in the pot for a little bit, there might be grounds to say that it would still be a Kli Rishon. However, elsewhere, the Mishnah Berurah, when he talks about the concept of bishul acher afia, which means cooking a baked item, he writes, kosav harama diyesh li zar b'zeh. Ela im reitz litin pas, yam dinat shliya yadzile des b'marak, oi shalakol apoches yishav b'kaf minagdera, kidei shiya kaira kli shlishi. So there the Mishnah Berurah is done with the following case. Let's say that you wanted to put bread into your very hot soup. So the bread was baked, but the bread was never cooked. So the concern is that if you put the bread into your soup, you'll be cooking the bread. You'll be transforming the bread via a liquid medium. So the Mishnah Berurah says there are two solutions. One is that you should wait until the soup cools. Or alternatively, you should use a ladle to take the soup out of the pot, and the intervening ladle will make the bowl into a Kli Shlishi. Your pot will be a Kli Rishon, the ladle will be a Kli Sheni, and the soup bowl will be a Kli Shlishi. So it emerges that a ladle would in fact be a Kli Sheni. The Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa resolves this contradiction in the Mishnah Berurah, these contradictory implications in the Mishnah Berurah, and he says that in general, you should consider a ladle like a Kli Rishon, given that there's a dispute about it. However, in a case of Bishul Acher Afia, given that the bread was already baked, we're going to be more lenient when it comes to the ladle. So the Shmir Shabbos says that in most cases, we'll consider the ladle like a Kli Rishon, but only when an item was already baked, we'll consider the ladle like a Kli Sheni. So how do we rule? So if the ladle was inside the pot for a while, then it's considered like a Kli Rishon, and the bowl will be considered like a Kli Sheni. However, if the ladle was not in the pot for a while, according to the Minchas Yitzchak, the bowl will be considered a Kli Shlishi, whereas according to the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, the bowl will only be considered a Kli Shlishi if you put a baked item into the bowl, but if you put something raw into the bowl, then you'd be in trouble. So you'd be allowed to put bread or matzah or croutons into your bowl if you used a ladle in between. And I've heard in the name of the Meir Tzedek of the Center for Jewish Living at Cornell University that it would even be okay to put ramen noodles in your bowl of soup. When it comes to spices, let's say like paprika or oregano, we saw there's a machlokes, there's a dispute as to whether or not you're allowed to put such spices into a klishim. However, if you ladled out soup into a bowl, you presumably would be allowed to put spice into this bowl because we consider the bowl a klishim. The Mishnah Berurah also rules you'd be able to pour from a ladle onto a cold liquid. The example the Mishnah Berurah gives is that you'd be able to pour hot sauce onto rice. But he says that pour the hot sauce not directly from the pot, but rather using a ladle. So to summarize, for our second problem case, which is a ladle, the question is the ladle considered a kli rishon or a kli sheni? And therefore, would it render a bowl a kli sheni or a kli shlishi? According to the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, in general, a ladle will be considered a kli rishon, and the bowl which you pour from the ladle into will be considered a kli sheni, and only with respect to putting bread, something which is already cooked, into your bowl, would be considered the bowl a kli shlishi. However, the Minchas Yitzchak says that the ladle is going to be considered a kli sheni, particularly if you didn't leave the ladle inside the pot for a long time. Let's then move to our third problem case, a case where we're not sure whether the thing in question has the status of a kli rishon or a kli sheni, and that is dover gush, a salad. A dover gush is a solid food item which retains its heat and doesn't depend on the heat of the walls of its container. When you have a liquid, say a chicken soup inside of a container, the liquid spreads evenly throughout the container, and therefore, when you move the liquid from a hot container into a cold container, the liquid will cool off when it touches the walls of the cold container. However, when you have a hot salad, so like a hot potato, and you move it from container to container, that potato retains its heat without much change. And that's because the surface area of the potato doesn't change, and it has limited contact with the airspace around it and with the cold container that's being put into. So the question is there significance when you move a dover gush, you move a salad from container to container? Will moving it from container to container change its status and lower its ability to cook? Is this hot potato that you moved from container to container considered a kli rishon or a kli sheni? According to the Isser Vater and the Marshal, a solid food which is still Yad Soledzbo, which then the recoil from, is considered a kli rishon. And the Shach brings this down in Yoredeya Simon Sadidal. He says, Das Isser Vater, the Isser Vater's opinion is, Da filu b'kli sheni, nodon ki kli rishon, kol zman shayad Soledzbo, hoyil v'hu dover gush. That even in a kli sheni, we'll consider a solid like a kli rishon, so long as it's yad soled, I suppose, so long as the hands recoil from its heat. V'chein das marshal, and if marshal says as well, the bedover gush ki goin basar v'kiyetze b'she ein itzolol, when it comes to a solid like meat, which is not a liquid, ein chiluk bein kli rishon and kli sheni. There's no distinction between kli rishon and kli sheni. But so long as the hand would recoil from its heat, it's forbidden. The Shach rules that way as well, and the Magen Avraham writes this as well. In contrast, Tosos and the Ran both hold that a salad just transferred to a kli sheni will take on a kli sheni status. And that's what the Ramah says as well in the Arkei Moshe, and that's what he writes in the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya Siman Tzadihei Sifkatan Gemel. He says, "V'kol zeh loy mayri ela b'chaim kli rishon, ki goin miyad sheisir min eish manichoy im heter. Avol im kvar munach b'kli sheni, v'acher kach maniach heter etzloy olov eini oser klal. The kli sheni eini oser." The context for the Ramah is he's talking about putting, say, a hot piece of non-kosher meat next to a hot piece of kosher meat. And the question is, would this hot non-kosher meat render the kosher meat forbidden? So he says that if you took the kosher meat right out of a kli rishon, right out of the frying pan, say you took your hamburger, a burger made out of ham, and touched it directly to your beef, that would be problematic. If, however, you took the hamburger out of the frying pan and put it on a plate, and it was on the plate for a minute or so, even if it's still hot, if you then put a kosher burger next to the hamburger would not confer its non-kosher status onto the kosher burger. What's the rationale here? What explains the dispute between the Shach on the one hand, following the Marshal and the Sif Heter, who say that a dover gush, that a salad, will be considered like a kli rishon? Whereas the Rama says that a dover gush, a salad food, which is transferred to a kli sheni, will take on a kli sheni status. So previously, we saw two possibilities as to the distinction between a kli rishon and a kli sheni. Previously, we saw two possibilities for understanding the difference between a kli rishon and a kli sheni. The first is that cooking only applies in erbishul, is only relevant in a container which has hot walls. And the second conception was that bishul cannot happen in a container with cold walls. According to the Marshal, a kli sheni can't cook because its walls are cold. And therefore, a dover gush, a solid food, where cold walls in a container are not going to cool it down, would be considered a kli rishon. Since a solid food stores heat inside of itself, it's considered as if it has hot walls of its own. In contrast, the Rama is taking the approach that bishul can only take place if you have hot walls. Now, the Rama is going to say that the davar gush, the salad, is only heated by the hot walls of the container that it's in. But once you move it to a container with cold walls, it loses its kli rishon status. How do we rule? So the Mishnah Berura is stringent on this question, and he considers a davar gush like a kli rishon. A solid food will retain a kli rishon status even if you move it to a kli sheni. He says, V'kol shekein lefi mashin noigin lifin abetzalim l'toich atavshil shu davar gush. B'vada yish lizar b'zeh. V'yesh poiskim shesoivrim davar gush shemunach b'kli sheni dinei k'kli rishon. So Mishnah Berura is saying, don't put onions onto a solid piece of meat or a solid potato, because there are some halachic sages who rule that a solid food, which is in a kli sheni, still retains the status of a kli rishon. And for this reason, the Ashkenazi practice is not to put uncooked spices and the like onto a hot potato or a hot piece of meat, even if it's in a kli sheni or a kli shlishi. In contrast, Ovad Yosef rules like the more lenient opinion, he rules like the Rambam, and he says that once a davar gush has gone into a kli sheni, it has a kli sheni status. So according to Rav Avadia, you wouldn't be able to put spices or other uncooked foods on a hot potato or meat, which are now no longer in the container in which they were cooked. Nonetheless, even according to the stringent opinion of the Mishnah Berura, the Mishnah Berura only takes davar gush to be a kli rishon as a suffix, as a doubt in order to be stringent. And for this reason, we'll find at least six areas of leniency, even according to the Mishnah Berura. First, let's say that you had potatoes inside of a kli sheni. So these hot potatoes are in the kli sheni, they have a status of davar gush, and you put raw onions on your potatoes. Are you now allowed to eat the potato with the raw onions, or do they become forbidden? So the Mishnah Berura says, bid the eved, post facto, if you've already done it, you can go ahead and eat it. The Mishnah Berura tells us, b'mayvir es hashvud shetochov olav hatzli me'a'esh, kol zman shuriteach shayadzer ledesboi, oser lotuach olav. Let's say you had some meat that was roasting on a spit, and now you've taken the meat off the fire, but it's still on the spit, so that would have the status of a kli rishon. It would be forbidden to spread oil or other spreads, mayonnaise, on your meat. V'afilu minyach acharkach ala ka'ara, even if you then transferred the meat onto a plate, shu kli sheni, gam ken aser, it would still be forbidden to put various spices and oil on your meat. The kama poiskim soivrim, the davar gush, kol zman sheyatzei ledesboi, afilu b'kli sheni mevashel. Since many poiskim hold that a solid food, so long as the hand will still recoil from it, so long as it's above 110 degrees, it'll even cook within a kli sheni. Umi kamakum, nonetheless. B'dyeved ein lesser. If you've already put spices, you've already put onions on the meat, we're not going to forbid you to eat your meat with the spices. Since we're relying on the halachic sages who say that a kli sheni doesn't cook. So that's leniency one. If you in fact did put spices on your davar gosh, on your salad food, once it was in a klisheni, the Mishnah Berurah would allow you to eat the davar gosh with the spices. Next, if you had a cold food which was once cooked but cooled down, you'd be allowed to put it on your davar gosh. And for that reason, you'd be allowed to put ketchup on a davar gosh that's in a klisheni. In response to the question of im mutar litan ketchup b'shabbos al basar seach hanimtza b'klisheni, are you permitted to put ketchup on Shabbos onto boiling meat, which is in a klisheni? Rav Moshe responds, Niri ledina t'kidas kvoid t'yirasei harav. D'rashon litan ketchup basar teach shenithin l'klisheni. You would be permitted to put ketchup on boiling meat, which is in a klisheni. Shekein chumra d'yesh bishol achar bishol b'davar lach hu chumra ba'alma. Because ketchup was once cooked. So although it's the case that we have a rule that yesh bishol achar bishol b'davar lach, that if something was once cooked, it would be problematic to recook it, Rav Moshe says this is just an added stringency. So you'd end up having an added stringency on an added stringency. Number one, that you're considering a solid food in a klisheni as if it has the ability to cook. And second, you'll be concerned about something that was once cooked, the ketchup, being recooked because it's cold. The third leniency by davar gosh pertains to the scope of what we consider a salad. The Marshal said that even rice would be considered a salad, given that rice is not a liquid. However, the Shach says that since rice spills, meaning if you're pouring rice out of a pot onto another pot, the consistency of rice is more similar, the way in which rice spills is more similar to the way liquid spills than the way that hard solids like potatoes spill, we should consider the rice not to be a davar gosh. Fourth, if you have a mixture of solids together with liquids, say like cholent, that mixture will not be considered a davar gosh. And the Pesach Shuvan Yor there writes, the hecha she'iru ha-basar im ha-rotev toch ha-klisheni, that in the case where you poured meat together with sauce into a klisheni, as miskar gam ha-basar ha-rotev she'mekarai v'soiv ha-basar mikol tzadav, then the meat will be cooled by the sauce which surrounds it on all sides. Fifth, if a raw food touches your davar gosh, we won't consider that raw food to be forbidden. So, for example, let's say that your hot potatoes touch salad on your plate, the salad is not going to be forbidden, even though, in principle, one might say the salad was cooked by touching the hot potato. And finally, sixth, you'd be allowed to sprinkle salt onto a davar gosh, onto a solid food. So let's review. Davar gosh is a solid food. And the contention is that a solid food is more likely to retain heat than a liquid. So if you remove the solid from a kli rishon and put it into a kli sheni, would the solid food now have a kli sheni status or would it have a kli rishon status? And would it therefore cook other items which come into contact with it, even if it's not located in a kli rishon? So here we saw Machlekes. On the one hand, we saw the Isser V'Heter and the Marshal both said that a davar gosh will be considered like a kli rishon, even when it's in a kli sheni, since it retains heat. And the Mishnah Berurah told us that we should be stringent like this opinion, and therefore you shouldn't put any uncooked items onto a boiling davar gosh, even if the davar gosh is in a kli sheni. In contrast, we saw the Ramban, the Gra, who were lenient and said when you put a davar gosh, when you put a salad into a kli sheni, it now has a kli sheni status. Because in a kli rishon, it's still touching the kli rishon, so it will be heated by the walls of the kli rishon, whereas once it's in a kli sheni, it will be cooled by the walls of the kli sheni. And Rav Avad Yosef ruled in accordance with the Ramban and the Gra, saying that a davar gosh will be considered like a kli sheni. Now, although it's the case that Ashkenazim are going to be machmir, they'll be stringent, like in the Mishnah Berurah, and they'll consider a davar gosh a kli rishon, there will still be numerous cases in which Ashkenazim can be lenient when it comes to a davar gosh. First of all, if you forgot and you put a raw food in your davar gosh, the Mishnah Berurah will allow you to eat the raw food that's on your davar gosh. So he'd allow you to eat your onions that were your raw onions that you put in your hot potato. Second, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that you'd be allowed to put ketchup onto a davar gosh because ketchup was once cooked. Third, if the solid food has a spillable consistency like rice, we won't consider it a davar gosh, and therefore you'll be allowed to put raw foods onto your rice. And similarly, cholent, which is a mixture of liquid and solid, will not be considered a davar gush. And finally, it's okay if raw foods on your plate are touching your davar gush. So this concludes our shiur of problem cases, of cases where it's not clear whether something is a kli rishon or a kli sheni. And we saw three problem cases. The first was iroi, was pouring from a kli rishon directly onto food. And we saw that iroi kli rishon doesn't exactly have the status of a kli rishon, but it cooks the outermost layer of foods that it's poured onto. We saw that iroi kli sheni, pouring out of a kli sheni directly onto food, is in most cases not problematic. It is only problematic if you pour directly onto a food that's easily cookable. The next problem case we saw was the case of the ladle. And we saw that the broad opinion is that if you keep your ladle in soup, in hot soup on the fire for a long time, then the ladle will take on a kli rishon status. However, if you quickly dip your ladle in and out of the soup bowl, the ladle will probably be a kli sheni, in which case your bowl will be a kli shlishi, and you'd be able to put raw foods even into your soup bowl. But ideally speaking, you should be more stringent following the opinion of the Shmiri Shabbos Kilchasa and only put foods that are already baked into your bowl, say like bread, ramen noodles, or croutons. Finally, the third problem case we saw was the case of davar gush, a solid food. And the contention was that a solid food is going to retain its heat even if it's moved out of a kli rishon into a kli sheni. It will retain a kli rishon status. And that's, in fact, how the Isser v'Heter and the Marshal paskind. But since it's a suffix, it's not clear to us whether a davar gush will in fact be a kli rishon or a kli sheni, the poskim are lenient by a davar gush in many cases, and therefore you would be allowed, say, to put ketchup onto your hot piece of meat or onto your hot potato, and a davar gush is not going to aser, it's not going to forbid things that touch it. And finally, you'd be allowed to put raw things into your cholent, assuming that your cholent has been moved to a kli shlishi.